It is 3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
President Obama authorizes airstrikes against Iraqi militants, and Secretary Kerry arrives in Afghanistan amid political deadlock. I'm Bill Michaels reporting from Washington. President Barack Obama says he has authorized U.S. military planes to carry out targeted airstrikes against Islamic extremists in northwestern Iraq. In a late-night White House speech Thursday, President Obama said American planes have dropped emergency food and water supplies to Iraqis threatened by the extremist. Earlier, U.S. officials said the planes completed their humanitarian mission near the town of Sinjar and then safely exited the area. In his speech, Mr. Obama said the U.S. cannot turn a blind eye to the advance of the militants who have forced out and killed ethnic minorities, but he stressed that no U.S. troops will be sent to Iraq. Extremists from the Islamic State group, which has taken over much of northern Iraq, are threatening to kill religious minorities, including Christians and Yazidis, who follow an ancient religion linked to Zoroastrianism. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is in Afghanistan on an unannounced visit to meet with presidential candidates locked in a hard-fought dispute over election results. On his second trip to the country in a month, Kerry is expected to press for a resolution between former Finance Minister Ashraf Ghani and challenger Abdullah Abdullah, who disagree about the results of a runoff vote that placed Ghani as the frontrunner. Kerry met with both candidates late Thursday and will hold talks with Afghan President Hamid Karzai today before heading to Myanmar for an Asian security conference. The U.S. Embassy in Kabul says 18% of the nearly 23,000 ballot boxes have been reviewed by an international team overseeing the audit. The Israeli military has accused militants in the Gaza Strip of violating a ceasefire just hours before it was scheduled to expire this morning. In a statement on Twitter, the Israeli military said two rockets from Gaza landed in southern Israel. No injuries were reported as a result of the rocket fire. Officials from Hamas and Israel have been holding indirect talks in Egypt in an attempt to extend the 72-hour ceasefire, which is set to end at 8 a.m. local time today. Both sides have warned they are ready to resume fighting if provoked, and they appear far apart on the terms for extending the humanitarian truce. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has activated its Emergency Operations Center at the highest level in response to the world's worst Ebola outbreak. CDC Chief Dr. Thomas Frieden told a congressional hearing on Ebola Thursday that the centers will soon have 50 disease experts in West Africa at the center of the crisis. He said he's confident no major outbreak in the U.S. will happen. Meanwhile, Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf has declared a state of emergency as the Ebola epidemic continues to take hundreds of lives in her country and others in West Africa. NATO Secretary General Anders Fogh Rasmussen is calling on Russia to step back from the brink of war in Ukraine by withdrawing thousands of combat troops massed on its border. Rasmussen spoke Thursday in the Ukrainian capital in a show of support for Kiev as government troops battle a pro-Russian insurgency near the Russian border. Other NATO officials warn that the Russian border force could invade the Ukraine under the guise of a peacekeeping mission. Western analysts say about 20,000 Russian troops have redeployed near the border in recent days, along with armor, infantry, special forces, and aircraft. Former National Security Agency contractor Edward Snowden has been granted permission to stay in Russia for 3 more years. His attorney says Snowden is working in the field of information technology and holding a job is a condition of his remaining in Russia. From Washington, I'm Bill Michaels reporting.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Batte in Washington. Today is Friday, August 8th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Liberia appeals to its diaspora to help the government educate citizens about the danger of Ebola.
Some of the difficulties we've been running into is out of ignorance and people denying. A phone call home to just say, look, this is serious, to say cooperate with the medical team, know that Ebola is real and is deadly, will be a big help.
Joseph Boakai is Liberia's vice president. The U.S. examines international response to contain Ebola. A human rights group says it has evidence that South Sudan's warring parties committed war crimes. DRC government says it is encouraged by U.S. business investment interest in the Democratic Republic of Congo. And the United Nations orders Congolese rebels to disarm or face the use of force.
It is time for those 1,500 to stop the fight. It is time for those sought by justice to be put before the appropriate tribunals. And it's time for those who can go back to Rwanda to do so.
Martin Kobler is the UN envoy in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and we will discuss the importance of decreasing illicit financial outflows to Africa. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Liberia's Vice President Joseph Boakai is appealing to Liberians in the United States and elsewhere in the diaspora to assist the government educate Liberians about the dangers of Ebola by placing phone calls to their relatives and family members and asking them to cooperate with service providers. In an exclusive interview with VOA, Vice President Boakai said in the initial stages of the outbreak, the government had a difficult time getting citizens to realize the seriousness of the disease. His comments come as Liberia Wednesday declared a state of emergency. On Thursday, the State Department ordered the departure of non-essential family members from Liberia and warned citizens against non-essential travel to that country. Vice President Boakai said he believes the state of emergency would help the government effectively control the spread of the Ebola virus.
Ebola effect has reached to the level now that it has become a threat to our livelihood, to our economic activities, and so the president thought it wise to do that so as to be able to give the leverage to deal with it effectively.
How can the international community, particularly the United States, be of help to you, your country, and the West Africa sub-region?
Well, to begin with, they already been to some extent, because before this was heightened, we had the Center for Disease Control. We had the Samaritan Press. A few days ago, we were at the White House when President Barack Obama said, well, tell your president we're going to support it. And I've been meeting with a lot of people within the American high ranks, and they have given us assurances. And I think they're going to announce the level of support that they're going to give to Liberia.
Mr. Vice President, there is an experimented drug that is being used currently to treat the two Americans that were infected with the disease in Liberia. Would your government like for that experimented drug to be tried in Liberia?
Interestingly, I've been hearing more and more of that, and I wouldn't be in position to say so, but we will leave it with the medical practitioners to decide on that. But I think if it has been used now on the doctor who was providing us services and the nurse who worked along with him, probably it could be a possibility that the Minister of Health will approve it.
You had a chance to meet with Liberians in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. I think it was last night, Wednesday night. What did they say to you, and what would you like for Liberians in the diaspora to do in the wake of the Ebola situation?
Upon my arrival, I mean, very pleased to see that the ambassador has already initiated some actions that good friends of Liberia, some Liberia citizens, were making themselves available to assist, whether by providing items that will be of need to this situation. Some of them are volunteering financial support. But more than that, I requested him last night to say that some of the difficulties we've been running into is that of ignorance and people denying. A phone call home to just say, look, this is serious, to say cooperate with the medical team, know that Ebola is real and is deadly, will be a big help.
Liberia's Vice President Joseph Boakai was speaking with me in Washington, D.C. Listen in coming days on this program and other VOA programs to more of my interview with Vice President Boakai. An emergency U.S. congressional hearing on Thursday examined the international efforts to contain the deadly Ebola virus. Testimony from a volunteer organization made a dire prediction about the spread of Ebola in Nigeria and drew scathing remarks about global response to the outbreak. VOA's Carol Pearson reports.
The head of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Dr. Thomas Frieden, told a House of Representatives subcommittee that even though the Ebola virus is widespread in three West African countries, it is a controllable disease.
It's important that we keep in mind that we do know, even without medicines that are specific to Ebola or a vaccine, we do know how to control it and we can stop it.
Dr. Frieden said supportive care saves people's lives. This includes providing fluids and oxygen if needed, as well as nutrients and monitoring vital signs. This type of care can help a person with Ebola recover. Dr. Frieden also said the international community can help West African countries with the Ebola epidemic, screen travelers, and prevent those who are ill from leaving. This too can help contain the virus. Samaritan's Purse is a Christian organization that provides support in Liberia. Two Americans who work for the charity, Dr. Kent Brantley and Nancy Wrightball, contracted the virus and are now being treated at a specially equipped hospital in Atlanta. Ken Isaacs from Samaritan's Purse said his organization saw the crisis coming in April, but the international community ignored pleas for help.
The international response to the disease has been a failure, and it is important to understand that.
Isaacs testified that a coordinated international response is the only way to slow the spread of Ebola, because the health ministries in the affected countries do not have the capacity to handle the crisis within their borders. He warned members of Congress that Ebola is going to come out with a fury in Nigeria in about 3 weeks, because a man who contracted Ebola in Liberia traveled to Nigeria, where he died. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
The UN's top envoy in the Democratic Republic of Congo said Thursday that if armed groups in the country's east do not voluntarily disarm, they will face military pressure to do so. From the United Nations, VOA's Margaret Bashir reports.
Martin Kobler told the UN Security Council that the top priority of the UN mission in DRC, known as MINUSCO, is the disarming and demobilization of the Rwandan Hutu rebel group, FDLR.
To the FDLR, seize this last opportunity and move forward with the process. All combatants, including leaders, must disarm now.
The FDLR was formed by the leaders of the 1994 Rwandan genocide. Since 2002, more than 11,000 FDLR fighters in Congo have been demobilized, repatriated, and reintegrated into Rwandan society. Kobler said the Congolese government estimates about 1,500 combatants and their dependents remain.
We are now in the end game. It is time for those 1,500 to stop the fight. It is time for those sought by justice to be put before the appropriate tribunals. And it's time for those who can go back to Rwanda to do so.
In May, the government gave rebels 22 days to voluntarily lay down their weapons and move to two temporary camps from which they would be repatriated or moved to a third country. Kobler said 186 combatants and their dependents took that offer, but since a six-month extension was given in July, the process has stalled.
The perceived absence of military pressure has thrown the process into a freezer.
He warned that fighters who failed to disarm could be forced to do so by MINUSCO and the Congolese army.
I suggest joint military action against those FDLR factions not willing to disarm and act against those who continue to commit human rights violations.
UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon says in a report that some 6,000 armed fighters surrendered to Congolese authorities in MINUSCO since the defeat of M23 rebels in the east last year. Mr. Ban called for the quick completion of the disarmament and demobilization of FDLR fighters and noted that ADF NALU, a Ugandan Islamist rebel group in the eastern DRC, has been significantly weakened but not defeated. Security gains in the past year have led nearly a half million displaced Congolese to return to their homes in the east, but Kobler warned that the situation is still fragile and not irreversible. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, August 8th. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. Democratic Republic of Congo's information minister says the just concluded U.S.-Africa summit presented an opportunity to his government to reintroduce the natural resource-rich country to American businesses. Lambert Mende, who attended the three-day summit as part of a delegation by President Joseph Kabila, tells reporter Peter Clotty that DRC officials explained to American business leaders the measures the government has implemented to ensure an investment-friendly country.
Well, we think that by enhancing the commercial exchange between the USA and the African countries, like the Democratic Republic of Congo, we shall give a chance to our people to find some connection for having a way of selling whatever they are producing there, and of course, for others to find in jobs and other ways of fighting unemployment in the Democratic Republic of Congo, DRC. Among the principal results we are waiting from this meeting.
How has been the reaction of U.S. businesses about their interest to do business with your government and your country, particularly to create the needed jobs that you spoke about?
Well, the businessmen we met here were very attentive to know whatever is going in our country because there is a long time we didn't have many investors from the USA. The reason being that we were plunged in a situation of war. But since they knew that things are improving now, our president and our colleagues of commerce and economy who accompanied also the president received a lot of visits, a lot of questions about how to help them to come back to Congo and invest.
Apart from them praising the improvement of security, did your government give them assurances, especially with the president and the delegation, give them assurances about the need to protect not only the lives and property, but as well as their investment when they come to Congo to invest in the country?
That is why we came with this minister in charge of economy, in charge of commerce, so that they discuss in detail all these information about the protection of investors.
Overall, what would you say has been so far at the U.S.-Africa summit? What do you see as the future of the cooperation between the U.S. businesses as well as the U.S. government and Kinshasa?
We are very much interested to have these business back because we experienced very good ties with the United States all these years, and now we are sure that they are coming back.
Information Minister Lambert Mende was part of the DRC delegation to the U.S.-Africa summit. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C. A rights group said it has documented acts of violence and cruelty in South Sudan that amount to war crimes. Human Rights Watch has released a new report called South Sudan's New War. VOA's Jody Kapua reports.
The 92-page report documents abuses since fighting broke out last December between government forces and rebels. Leslie Lefko is deputy director of Human Rights Watch's Africa Division.
We conclude that based on the research we've done with more than 400 victims and witnesses of abuses, that both sides have committed war crimes, and very possibly these may amount to crimes against humanity. So very serious crimes under the laws of war.
Lefko says one of the worst incidents documented occurred between December 15th and 18th of 2013.
We documented how over the course of the next couple of days, government forces, mainly Dinka members of the government forces, went house to house rounding up people of Nuer ethnicity, detained between 200 and 400 men in an old police station in Juba, and killed most of them.
The Human Rights Watch official says at least a half dozen men, some of whom had been shot, survived by hiding under dead bodies. The report contains their testimony on what happened. Lefko says there were many other incidents.
In several of the key towns where the fighting took place over the last 6 months, places like Bor, Malakal, Bentiv, there were horrific crimes against civilians by both sides. Often people were targeted because of their ethnicity, again by both sides, were killed in hospitals, were shot at as they were fleeing. Elderly people were killed in their homes because they were disabled or couldn't flee. So really horrific violence that continues at a lower level perhaps right now, but to this day.
When fighting first erupted, many observers and analysts were reluctant to label it as an ethnic conflict. Not now.
I think looking back, there's no question that the ethnic dimension to this conflict is very clear. But I think 7 months on, it's very clear that many of these killings have been based on people's ethnicity.
However, she adds, there have been a lot of crimes based on economic motives, too, such as looting. Human Rights Watch is calling for a comprehensive arms embargo on South Sudan and targeted sanctions on any individuals responsible for serious violations of international law. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
The White House and African leaders announced this week the creation of a U.S.-Africa partnership to combat illicit finance, a practice that D.C.-based research group Global Financial Integrity says costs African economies $55.6 billion each year. Heather Lowe, legal counsel and director of government affairs at Global Financial Integrity, tells Ricky Shryak that efforts to decrease illicit financial outflows can be crucial to Africa.
There's no sort of one definition of illicit financial flows, and we define it as the movement of money that is breaking the laws either in a country of destination, a country of transit, or a country of origin as it moves through the international financial system. And so there are a lot of ways that that can happen. You can have movement of money that is the result of sort of what we call grand corruption, which is essentially, you know, politicians stealing money out of coffers and sending it to banks abroad. Obviously, it's breaking laws in the country of origin there, certainly, if not the country of destination in many cases. And then you have trade-related movement of money.
This week, the White House and African leaders announced the establishment of a bilateral U.S.-Africa partnership to combat illicit finance. And according to your group's research, most of the illicit outflows from Africa occur through what you guys call the fraudulent over and under invoicing of trade transactions. What is trade misinvoicing, and how can this partnership possibly combat it?
When you under invoice or over invoice a good that's being traded, and that might be a good, it might be a service, it might be intellectual property, it can be anything that is being traded across borders, whether it's tangible or intangible, you are shifting money under the guise of trade when, in fact, you are moving that money for some other purpose because you are lying on an invoice in order to cover up the movement of some part of that money. And this happens all the time, and we can see it in that movement could be the movement of, for example, a kickback or a bribe payment. In order to move drug money, for example, cartels will commingle their drug proceeds with the sale of actual goods. And so they'll be able to invoice shipments around the world under an over-invoice in order to move money from one place to another.
Have you guys done any research about how that's affected real estate prices in certain parts of the world?
Absolutely. Construction is a very primary way of laundering money around the world. And so when you're talking about creating construction projects, for example, in a country that is not your own, you know, actually investing in a foreign country and creating a large apartment building that in theory has rents that are coming to you that you can write down on your tax forms as justification for the money that is in your bank account.
That was Heather Lowe, legal counsel and director of government affairs at Global Financial Integrity. She was speaking to Ricky Shryak from Washington, D.C. Now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Mark Owoma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with basketball. Hosts Madagascar play Angola at the Africa Men's Under-18 Basketball Championship quarterfinals in Antananarivo today, Friday. Ivory Coast face Mali, Benin challenge Egypt, and Mozambique encounter Tunisia. Turning to football, Libya's El Ahli Benghazi face Tunisia's CS Sfaxien in their Orange Africa Champions League tie today, Friday. Tomorrow, Saturday, Algeria's Entente Setif play Tunisia's Esperance. On Sunday, the Democratic Republic of Congo's TP Mazembe and AS Vita face Sudan's El Hilal and Egypt's Zamalek, respectively. Elsewhere, Zambia's Nkana encounter Egypt's El Ahli, Tunisia's Etoile du Sahel face Ivory Coast's Sewe Sports, and Cameroon's Cotton Sport engage Republic of Congo's AC Leopards in the Orange Africa Confederations Cup action tomorrow, Saturday. On Sunday, Ivory Coast's ASEC Mimosa host Mali's AS Real de Bamako. In Rwanda, South Sudan's Atlabara face Zanzibar's KMKM, Rwanda's Rayon Sports play Tanzania Mainland's Azam, as Kenya's Gor Mahia engage Uganda's Kampala City Council Authority at the start of the Council of Eastern Central Africa Football Association's SEKAFA Kagame Club Championships in Kigali today, Friday. Tomorrow, Saturday, Burundi's defending champions Vitalo tackle Somalia's Banadir, Rwanda's police meet Sudan's El Merek, and Rwanda's military side APR face Burundi's Atletico. On Sunday, Zanzibar's KMKM engage Tanzania Mainland's Young Africans, Djibouti's Telecom challenge Kampala City Council Authority, and Ethiopia's Adama play Rayon Sports. Finally, the five-day Africa Senior Athletics Championships gets underway in Marrakesh, Morocco on Sunday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good weekend. We will see you on Monday. Here's our listener mail for this Friday morning, August 8th.
It has become imperative for the Nigerian National Youth Service Corps team to stop posting commemorations to the northern part of the country where the Boko Haram insurgency are not ready to give up. And students should as well stop seeking admission from the state until the situation improves. I am Prince John Michel Obaneku in Obudu Cattle Ranch, God bless Place, Nigeria.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to DaybreakAfrica at voanews.com. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has activated its Emergency Operations Center at the highest level in response to the world's worst Ebola outbreak. CDC Chief Dr. Thomas Frieden told a congressional hearing on Ebola on Thursday that the centers will soon have 50 disease experts in West Africa at the center of the crisis. He said he is confident no major outbreak in the U.S. will happen. That's it for this Friday, August 8th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckfro, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as post-Senator Mark Ouma, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barton in Washington, hoping that all of you in Africa will have a very good weekend.
Music Time in Africa offers splendid sounds from the continent that all humanity calls home. From the classics of yesteryear to the hot tracks of the moment, I offer you what you need: free ear therapy and mind massage. Join me, I'm Heather Maxwell, for Music Time in Africa
every Saturday and Sunday at 0900 2000 and 2100 UTC.